In the mid-50s, two men knocked over a kerosene stove during a fight at a concert. After fleeing the blaze, the guitar player realized he left his beloved Gibson inside. B.B. King then ran in and saved it. He later learned that the fight was over a woman named Lucille, and ever since, his guitars have borne that name. You can find Lucille at the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.
Little Stevens Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
It's Coolest Conversations podcast time in Little Stevens Underground Garage, presented by Hard Rock. I'm the Mighty Manfred, and thanks for listening. Please remember to follow, subscribe, rate, and review. My guest today is hard rock and bluesman Harless Sweetwater. He's been active since the early 2010s with albums, EPs, and his latest single, Won't Be Satisfied, is a recent coolest song in the world. We'll hear some of that now, followed by my interview with Harless on your Coolest Conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock in Little Stevens Underground Garage.
Come on out, baby, what you doing to me? You got me buzzing like a honeybee. Every time I'm near you, baby, I lose my cool. You got me running, running, acting like a fool. You're so fine, I wanna take you home tonight. I won't be satisfied until I make you mine. I got money to burn, I got a bottle of wine, I got rock and roll records, we can dance all night. There's the world global to the ground outside. You and me, baby, like the night on fire. You're so fine, I wanna take you home tonight. I won't be satisfied until I make you mine. I wanna rock ya, roll ya. Let's go back to my place and get out of control. I wanna make you dizzy like a spinning top. I won't slow down until you holler. Stop the way you jimmy and shake, the way you shake your hips, all the way down to your backbone flip. You got my mind racing like a hot rod on a track. You got my heart pumping like a big bass drum. You're so fine, I wanna take you home tonight.
It's the Mighty Manfred with you here in Little Stevens Underground Garage, and right now it is in time indeed for today's Coolest Conversations. With me is bluesman Harless Sweetwater. His latest single, Won't Be Satisfied, is our current coolest song in the world. How are you, Harless?
I'm good, man. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm happy to be chatting with you. I've read that you were from Orange County. Are you born and bred Orange County, California?
Yeah, I'm a California kid through and through. Yeah, especially, born and raised here in Orange County.
Man, your music, very rock and blues influenced. What kind of stuff was getting played in your home when you were growing up?
Man, just all kinds of music. My parents both loved music and a lot of rock and roll. I remember my mom had albums by The Doors, Elvis, Blood, Sweat, and Tears, Three Dog Night, Chuck Berry, always great artists and records laying around the house and being played in the house. When my mom would get ready for work, she would just, you know, blast as loud as she could these records and this rock and roll music. So it was pretty cool. She didn't care if we were sleeping or not. That's how we woke up.
You have any siblings?
I have a sister and then two sisters and a brother.
And did any of your family members play?
No, my mom.
Like your uncles, mom?
No, my mom did. She played a little bit of guitar and she sang. She had a real beautiful voice. And played a little bit of guitar too. And I remember her singing and, breaking out the guitar once in a while when I was really little, little kid.
And so when she would break out the guitar, this is like an acoustic
guitar? Yeah, she just had like a little Spanish acoustic guitar, classical guitar, whatever you want to call it.
Well, why do you play guitar? What got you into playing guitar?
When I was about, I don't know, must have been like 7 or 8 years old, something like that. Like I said, my mom had this Chuck Berry record, and my mom would just kind of like, she would just show me things, you know, hey, I want to show you how to make, you know, this kind of food or that kind of food, or let me show you how to do this or do that. So for some reason, my mom just decided she wanted to show me this Chuck Berry record. And she put it on the record player and gave me the Gatefold album cover. And as I opened it up and the music played, there was a awesome, just great picture of Chuck Berry. It was a live shot from the 70s. And when I saw that picture, when I saw that photo, man, that was like, blew my mind. You know, they say a picture is worth a thousand words, right? That picture just blew my mind, blew me away. And that's what really, that photo is what got me into music and wanting to play and wanting to sing. Because, you know, I saw Chuck Berry in that photo. It was a live shot. And I just said, man, whatever he's doing, I want to do that.
Is it like a live shot of him in front of an
audience? Yeah, it's a live shot of him just kind of drenched in sweat, looking down at his guitar, smiling a bit. And it's like a two-toned, like hot pink and black and white, you know, kind of a black and white photo with a hot pink overlay. Man, that's so cool, man. So cool.
So that was the kind of epiphany. That was the rock and roll moment.
Right.
There.
Because
so you're like seven, So is that, did you start asking your mom to show you stuff on the guitar? Had she already started doing
so,
that?
Yeah. I mean, up to that point, from the time I was born till, let's say it was 7 years old, there was always music playing in the house, music playing in the car, at parties in the backyard. And so music was all around me. And at that moment, when I saw the Chuck Berry photo, that's when my mind got blown. And I was like, boom, I want to do this. So at that same time, we had just moved into a new development in suburbs down there in Laguna Niguel. And there was lots of other kids that lived on our street. So I had all these buddies and they loved music too. So we decided to kind of start a little band, and we just kind of started learning chords and showing each other chords and little guitar licks and things like that. One of the kids was maybe 4 or 5 years older. So he picked up things pretty quick and then showed those things to me and my friend, and we started a little band and started playing.
And how old
by that
you?
Time I was probably around 10.
And what kind of stuff were you guys messing
around
with?
Well, so what happened was, like I said, around 7 years old I got into Chuck Berry, and then naturally, you know, looking at the album covers and all the text, and I mean, I used to read everything on the album covers. I used to read the labels on the albums themselves, who wrote the songs, where it was printed. I mean, everything interests me at that point. And so I'm 7 years old. New Kids on the Block came around and they brought a Kiss album. And that blew my mind too. It was Kiss Destroyer. So I was fully like immersed in rock and roll at that point, listening to everything from Chuck Berry to Kiss at that point. And then we decided to, you know, we staged little lip syncing concerts in our garage for the neighbors and charged them like 25 cents to get in and watch us lip sync to Kiss songs. And at that point we got a little bit more serious and started actually learning the instruments. And then that's when we got more back into the Chuck Berry stuff, which led us to the Stones, which led us to the Beatles, which led us backwards to, like, you know, Muddy Waters and Howlin' Wolf. And we just, you know, got all wrapped up into it. It's the beauty of, and the joy of discovering music, you know?
Yeah. I was about to say to go forward,
yeah,
to go back.
Which thank God, because that's when I found some stuff that, really just attached, I got attached to, which is the old blues stuff, you know, and more rock and roll.
Well, okay. So, right. So, two things I wanted to ask. So, when did you actually get your own first guitar, your first electric guitar?
That was around 9 or 10. Yeah. 10 years old.
All right. Did your mom, your parents help you get the guitar?
Yeah. My mom's dad, my grandfather, paid for a guitar for me and a little Fender Champ amplifier. And so I got a cheap.
What kind of guitar?
It was, at the time, I didn't know what it was, but I think it was one of those like Greco or just a Japanese knockoff of a Telecaster. It was white with a white pick guard and a little amp, and they just, you know, I started like that. I think before that, you know, like I said, she had a guitar laying around. It was that acoustic, and I messed around with that. But I was more interested in electric guitar because of Chuck Berry and Kiss, and, you know, the things that I saw, you know, were always rock and rollers playing electric guitar. So I didn't waste much time with the acoustic. I was like, just get me an electric guitar. I want to be Chuck Berry. I want to be Ace Frehley. Let me rock and roll, man. You know, so I didn't mess around with acoustic too much.
So you mentioned, or if I'm remembering this right, so it's back to Chuck Berry, and then kind of the Stones, the Beatles, and so how did you get back again into discovering the blues? You mentioned Muddy Waters' name, but what was the back door, the door to get there? Was that through the Stones?
I was more into the Beatles, and.
Yeah.
So, like I said, as a kid, I'm reading all the text on the records. I mean, I didn't just read the covers. I read the albums themselves, you know, the little paper circle in the middle with all the who wrote the songs, what the record company was. I mean, so, you know, you see who writes the songs and you're like, who's, you know, this guy or that guy. And, you just go back. And so then when I heard, Buddy Holly and you just, I don't know, it's just weird. You just kind of go in this rabbit hole, right? You discover who all these cats are, and you just, it's just like, boom, you just explode with all this, music and excitement, you know? So, the Stones and the Beatles, reading those texts and who wrote the songs and who was on those labels, you know?
And so you find out stuff like Muddy Waters and so forth. But let's say, you know, you're in your, so you get out of high school and are you still playing music then into your early 20s, trying to put bands together? What type of stuff are you pursuing? I mean, I know you've had some albums that have come out, but what is the timeline here?
Once I started playing at 10 years old, actually playing guitar, I never stopped, and I just kept going and going and going. And so, like I said, we held these little lip syncing concerts in our garage and charged people. Once we started learning to play, we formed a band and we started playing little shows talent shows and at churches and stuff like that, and in our garage. And so then I moved up to Huntington Beach, and I wasn't in a band, but I still played. And then just a little bit in my senior year, I started forming a band and met some other cats, and we started playing everywhere that we could, you know, so anywhere we could, parties, warehouse parties, backyards. We played at some high schools during lunch, and then got into, like, we started going to a junior college, met more people, more players, more people that love music, and more parties, and it just kind of grew from there.
So you're going into junior college, so are you're taking classes?
Well,
and
I was
stuff
supposed
I
to.
Mean, were you right, that's what I'm getting at. I mean, so you were, your real focus is trying to pursue music.
Yes.
And you're the tickets. Yeah. Okay.
So, I mean, I just went to junior college. And once I started meeting all these people, and I would play all the time outside, and people would gravitate towards me, you know, they would just start. I would sit under a tree and start playing and singing, and people would start coming over to listen. And we started, you know, making friends, and it's kind of like, you know, come check out my band, and just started kind of growing like that.
Well, let's talk about this coolest song in the world this week. It's your latest single, Won't Be Satisfied. Also features David Hidalgo of Los Lobos and also John Doe of X. How'd you get those guys involved with
recording? Well, I had been recording at this studio called Sound Asylum Studios in Santa Ana. And Los Lobos had done some stuff there. And David had done some things there as well. And the owner, who also was the guy that recorded and engineered and did all my stuff, Mike Truelines, he would say, hey, man, David's looking for some stuff to do. He would really fit on some of your songs. So we just made the connection. I had opened for Los Lobos before at the Coach House in San Juan Capistrano, and met him there. He had been recording some stuff there, wanted to get into some other projects and play. And this is during COVID, you know, during the pandemic.
Okay.
So there wasn't a lot, you know, there wasn't a lot of shows going on. There wasn't any, hardly any activity. So we made the connection and played the song for David and he liked it. And I said, nah, come, I would love it if you came jammed a solo on it. And he said, yeah, no problem. And I also had another band at the time. I had a couple bands I was messing with that were my bands, but he ended up playing accordion on one of the songs. So he came down and played accordion, and we played electric guitar on Won't Be Satisfied.
Well, what is the song you played accordion on?
I have a group called the Coyotes del Barrio, and I said, man, I would love to get you on a song we have called Ver Espacio. And so he said, yeah, sure. He says, I'm not much of an accordion player, which that's not true. He is. He sounds great. So I said, well, yeah, bring your guitar and bring an accordion and jam on that one, too, if you would. And he's like, yeah, sure. No problem.
Well, that tells us about David. What about Mr.
Yeah. Bell? And at that time, Lee Rocker from the Stray Cats was recording his album at that studio, Sound Asylum Studios. And so he was in there all the time. And I'm like, well, maybe I could get Lee Rocker to play bass. And so we made that connection and I talked to Lee and he liked the song and he was like, sure, no problem. He was jumping back and forth from Orange County in LA to New York. And so the timing and the logistics of everything, it just wasn't going to work out, you know, with what he had going on. Yeah. And so I just was like, well, who else can I get? And I thought, well, maybe, Eric from Sublime would play. As I started thinking about all the players, who else can I get on this if Lee can't do it? Yeah. And I thought, well, John Doe, that would be awesome. Because I know Billy Zoom from X, and I thought, well, maybe John would do it. So made that connection, and John was like, yeah, that's in my wheelhouse. And he's in Austin, Texas. So the engineer sent the song to him, and I mean, what he sent back just blew my mind, you know, because we had talked about it. And he goes, well, I could just kind of play these straight punk rock, you know, eight notes, kind of thing. But man, what he sent back, I was like, that is one of the most kick-ass bass lines I've ever heard. And it's on my song. So I was like, so stoked. Cool.
Well, when did you come up with the idea for the tune?
That's an old tune I had just laying around, and I'd kind of forgotten about it. Mm-hmm. I wrote that a long time ago, like years before, but I wanted to bring it back and redo it and kind of soup it up a little bit, you know, and supercharge it. So and it's always been a rock and roll tune, but it wasn't as didn't have as much of that edge to it. You know, it was a little bit more mellow, like maybe a Chuck Berry style. But I wanted to give it like more of a punk rock kind of attitude or edge to it, you know.
So thinking about that, do you, now this one had been kind of laying around, you revisited it. Do you typically like work up a song, play it live for a while and then record it? Or do you just, you know, come up with an idea and then try and get to the studio and then play it out live after?
Well, kind of both, you know, it just depends. If I write something at the house and, you know, I immediately, I'm feeling it, you know, I'll try to get into the studio as soon as possible. You know, I think every song has a momentum to it, you know? So if I'm really feeling a song, I'll bring it to the band and show them and then try to get into the recording studio to get it down as soon as possible. And then other ones just kind of lay around and need another verse or another chorus or something like that. And they just kind of, they don't feel as urgent. So I treat them as such. And I just kind of, the ones that I get super excited about and just the ones that I feel like are telling me, hey, this needs to be down as soon as possible. Then I do that, you know, kind of just listen to the song. The song will tell you everything, really.
Well, you had a single out last November called Down in the Delta. And then also had an EP, Diesel, Dirt and Spit. I think it came out in 2021. Are you working on a full length album or are you just more into, you know, releasing a single at a time?
I think with the way things are right now, I'm just really working on singles, and EPs are cool too. I like doing EPs and I like doing songs as a collection, you know, 4, 5, 6 songs as an EP collection. But right now I think just singles, you know, people always want to know, you know, what's next. You know, so you got to keep feeding the machine.
Well, then that's no problem because your soul's cranking it out. You feel the music. You're just channeling, you know?
Yeah, you get the songs just kind of, you know, just roll through. You put them down and on your phone as ideas, and then they grow into recordings and they play them live. And I'm more about playing live music than anything else, but getting songs down to put out to, you know, to give to the world, and hopefully people enjoy them and dig what you're doing. That's cool.
So today is the 28th, and I know you've already played a couple of times this month. From your schedule online, I see your next gig is Friday, May the 12th at the Poorhouse in Oceanside, California. Have you ever played there before?
No, that's going to be my first time at the Poorhouse. Never played at that particular spot. I'm looking forward to it, though. It should be cool.
And when you do, is it like one set or two sets?
We're playing there with some friends of mine, Ash Easton and her band. So I think we're just going to do one set.
Mm-hmm. One set. And how many live shows do you do normally over the course of a year, would you guess?
Well,
average, not, you know, subtracting out the pandemic.
Yeah, well, we're just kind of getting rolling, you know, again. And I had toured real not super heavy, but I was always busy, a lot of shows out on the road across the United States, and I was always on the road playing shows, lots and lots of shows. But you know, of course the pandemic hit, and so things got backed up, and you know, so now we're just kind of getting rolling again. Used to play a lot of blues festivals, but I'm finding that a lot of the ones that we played back in the day and would return to, or that were accessible, kind of died out because of the pandemic, which is real unfortunate, you know. But so we're just getting rolling again, and I'm just trying to, right now I'm approaching like a less is more kind of attack, you know, as far as playing live.
Well, I noticed, well, you mentioned festivals, and I saw from the schedule, there are a couple of blues festivals you do in the summer. Have you ever done those festivals in Europe? Have you ever been able to get over to
Europe?
Well,
man, I don't really fly.
Well, no, you're a human being. You're not a bird, man. You know, you soar with the music, but you're not a bird. I mean, I got that. But you say you don't like getting on a plane.
I've never flown. I'm just working on that too, mentally getting over that fear of flying. You know,
would you take a boat?
I take a train.
Yeah, it would be a slow boat.
But for Europe, yeah, I take a boat to Europe.
Yeah. So how often do you, I'll set this up. So a friend of mine was like a road manager for a Fat Possum when they had all these blues guys. And I think it was, he would go out and there'd be like R.L. Burnside and several of these guys, I think maybe T. Model Ford is a guy I'm thinking of specifically. And this my friend's name, he called himself Sweet Dog. And he'd been like in the Marines. And so he was, you know, road managing these guys and they had a great rapport. But he said the worst place for him to play was in Canada. And he said, because in Canada, especially, there are always these guys that would come up early in the evening and they're like, hey, you know, I'd like to come up on stage and jam with these guys. And Sweet Dog would have to say, no, man, you're not, you know, nobody's jamming with them. They don't want you up there. Don't, you know, chill out, you know. And in this one specific case, there was a harmonica guy wanted to sit in and Sweet Dog had to put him off and the guy just didn't want to give up. And so there was a point where T-Model was calling for Sweet Dog for a cup and Sweet Dog knew what he needed. He was incontinent, you know, and so he's trying to get him a cup and this guy sort of like weasels his way through. No, here's a cup, thinking he's just going to hand him a cup to drink with. And T-Model's like, no, man, lower, hold it lower, hold it, keep it steady. Yeah, that's it, right there. Hold it steady for me, and so urinated in the cup while the guy was holding it, you know, which is not what the guy was expecting, and that sort of kind of cured him of that. But what I wanted to get at is does this ever happen where you're doing a show and some guy is like trying to say, oh man, you know, I'm play from here, you know, everybody knows, but can I get up and jam with you? And how do you handle it? Is that a cool thing to do or is that not a cool thing to do?
Well, first of all, that's an awesome story. I never heard that story before. That's great, man. But that's happened once in a while. It seems to always be harmonica players. What's the deal with that? What's with these guys?
I don't know. Because they don't have to carry anything, you know?
Man. They just have it right there in their pocket. They're ready to go. The good thing about... in those situations is I usually play a half step tuned a half step down. So I always, you know, kind of play it off like, you know, it's not going to sound good. Or what key do you have? Oh, we don't, you know, it's harder for me to play in that key or whatever. So I always try to be nice about it, but it has happened to me. And
has it ever worked? Have you ever thought afterwards, oh, that wasn't so bad?
I mean, yeah, I'm trying to think back to when it has happened to me, and it doesn't happen very often. But the times that it has, it just depends on how I feel. It depends on how much I've had to drink.
Yeah.
And if I'm feeling really happy and like, hell yeah, let's go for it. Or if I'm like, you know, feeling ornery, you know. But
Right, normally that's right.
Kind of like, you know, this is my thing and this is what I'm doing and this is how I'm at work. I'm at work. You know, when I'm on stage, I'm at work. And just let me do my job type of thing. But and if it's like some guy coming up from the audience or somebody, you know, just waltzes in and, hey, I brought my harp. Can I jam with you? Normally I don't like to do it, you know, because... we just usually have our set and we like to roll through our set, you know? So I handle it it just depends on how I'm feeling. There's been times I've been like, all right, cool. And if the guy sucks, then that's it. You know, okay, you're done. There's the one song and you're done. If it sounds good and it feels good, then it's like, you know, hey, we may call him back up, you know, later on.
I want us to go out with a track off of that EP, Diesel, Dirt, and Spit. And one of the cuts is Somebody's Baby. It's got this cool, just a little bit sort of riff to it. What can you tell us about the song? Do you remember how that one came together?
Yeah, I was listening to a lot of Foghat at the time, especially their first album. Uh-huh. And I really liked that era for rock and roll music. And so I wanted to write something kind of, you know, in that vein. And I was just messing around with the riff and just wanted to have a good groove. And I've been really into writing just simple lyrics. You know, I don't want to think too much as far as lyrics and playing and singing all at the same time live. You know, I just want to have a good time. And I approach it kind of like that old rock and roll style, like Little Richard and Chuck Berry, where you just, you know, you can just sing and have fun and not have to worry too much about the lyrics, you know, and not put too much into those things. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, and so the EP's like from 2021. Those songs are on there. The several songs, the ones that are your tunes. Did you write those during the pandemic, or were those tunes that have been percolating?
Yeah, those had been. There's two originals on there, Somebody's Baby, and I forget the other one.
Well, the other tracks on there, there's something boogie, and you do a version of Spoonful, and I can't remember.
Slow Burn. So slow burn.
Okay. So slow burn
is mine. Okay. Somebody's Baby is mine. I wrote both of those, and the boogie is adapted from Canned Heat's version at the at Woodstock, because they got a lot of different versions of that song, but I just took the one from the performance of Woodstock, Canned Heat at Woodstock, and added my own spin to it, and then of course Spoonful. Willie Dixon, Howlin' Wolf. But yeah, all that came during the, just coming out of the pandemic. Wrote those, like I said, I was in the mindset of like Foghat and Grand Funk Railroad and that kind of 70s, early 70s rock. So it was super fun. And I would, you know, I love that style, Rock and Roll Hoochie Coo by Rick Derringer. That was the vibe I was kind of going for. And everything was recorded, mm-hmm. No overdubs. I believe there's no overdubs. We just pressed record and just went for it. One guitar, like Van Halen one, you know, just one guitar, bass, drums, vocals.
Well, Harless, I want to thank you so much for chatting with me today on our Coolest Conversation.
Hey, thanks so much for having me, man. I really appreciate it.
All right. Well, we're going to leave now with Somebody's Baby off your EP, Diesel, Dirt, and Spit. It's Harless Sweetwater and Little Steven's Underground Garage. Sweetwater, that was Somebody's Baby off his EP Diesel, Dirt, and Spit. This is the Mighty Manfred, and thanks again to Harless for speaking with me on our Coolest Conversations. Thanks also to Sammy Semenza for producing our podcast. Leather Catsuit is a New Jersey, New York City area band featuring guitar slinger Steve Conti and is fronted by Kim Olin. The latter will join me next time around to talk about the band's eponymous debut EP. That's your next Coolest Conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
Bye. Buddy, you're a boy. Make a big noise playing in the street. I'm gonna be a big man someday. You got mud on your face, you big disgrace. Kicking your can all over the place.
Some things are better when they rock. The Seminole Hard Rock Hotels and Casinos rock around the clock with nonstop casino action, rooms fit for the king, pools, spas, restaurants, and clubs for every taste and temptation. Seminole Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Tampa or Hollywood, Florida. We will rock you.